Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com.
From hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 458. In this episode, Scott talks with Matt Warren about how to make performance a feature of your application.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with Matt Warren, who is a performance expert. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Scott. Yes, very good, thanks.
And you just came off a talk at NDC London talking about performance as a feature. How did that go?
Yeah, I think it went well. I was in the, maybe you call it the graveyard slot Friday afternoon, but no, there seemed to be a decent amount of people there, and it's, I think there's other people who want to find out about performance like I've been trying to do myself. So yeah, I think it's a good, seems to be a popular topic anyway.
Mm-hmm. And you've made this kind of like your favorite thing, like performance is now what you do. You focused on performance and decided that you would dig into it as deeply as you could.
Yeah, certainly in terms of what I blog about and what I spend my free time looking into, if you like, and things like that. So yeah, it's definitely my focus, my pet hobby, maybe as a way of saying it. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And on your blog at mattwarren.org, you have dug into a number of interesting things, particularly Stack Overflow. Even though you're not an employee of Stack Overflow, you've dug into how they deal with performance, and then also the interestingly the Roslyn code base, the code base of the open source C# compilers.
Yeah. So I think I started with the Roslyn one. I can't remember, but I had the idea of looking into these public code bases or public projects or public companies, if you like, who are open about what they're doing, particularly around performance. And in the case of Roslyn, thinking that it's going to be a good example of how best practices for C# as it's the C# compiler team writing it and Microsoft C# devs. And then obviously Stack Overflow is a very high profile site. They're very big on performance because, you know, they're a top 50 website, and they, their basic thing is they run on fairly high spec machines, but they run with very little CPU usage. So they really care about performance, and that's their way that they can get scaling, from my understanding looking in. So yeah, I thought that I'd take a look at the code base in particular, but also some of the projects they might release, or with the Roslyn, there's all the discussions on Coplex that go into some of the things they're doing. There's been a few talks and stuff by some of the people on the Roslyn team have gone into this as well. So yeah, it's sort of to take a chance to see what was around and what from the performance side of things.
Doesn't it seem like kind of when you talk to your friends at other companies that are working on things, I know this is the case with my friends, is that they almost feel like they're taking performance as an afterthought. And when it becomes a problem, then it's a big, let's all freak out and try to make the system performant.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's always this thing, we'll fix the performance before the site goes live, but we'll do it, you know, one of the sprints, you know, at the end, and we kind of know what happens to those sprints at the end. There's all the other stuff that didn't quite get done in the previous one. So yeah, I think there's definitely that it can be, if not an afterthought, at least maybe not the priority. And yeah, I think we'd all prefer to be able to fix a performance feature before our customers told us about it. That's probably the other part of it, is, you know, if the first time we find we've got performance issues is when the site goes down, that's not a great time to be fixing performance or trying to recreate performance or things like that. So it's the idea behind the performance is a feature is the kind of tagline I've given to it, and it's something I shamelessly borrowed from Jeff Atwood. He came up with it in terms of Stack Overflow, but the idea is that we give it the same priority as that we might give security in our website, or we might give functional features or things like that, and trying to see what that looks like at places that that's done, which I believe Stack Overflow is one and the Roslyn codebase is another.
Yeah, it's always so surprising to me how tolerant big enterprises and the kind of the internal projects will people will be. Like, they will be tolerant of 5 and 10 second long, you know, page loads. And I just can't imagine that is okay. It's almost like the old adage of, you know, how do you boil a frog? You boil a frog slowly so the frog doesn't actually know it's being boiled. And then if you bring a new employee in and say, hey, look at the performance on this site, it sucks, they're going to be like, this water is hot, and jump right out. Like, why would you let it get this bad? Well, I don't know. The water kind of got hot slowly.
I mean, because there's quite a famous stat about Google in terms that they shave, you know, they artificially made their web pages go some bit slower and they lost loads of customers. And then, like you say, the other extreme is tends to be the internal apps or line of business apps, or, you know, where you say, like you say, they might get slower and slower over time. But even those, you could probably argue, you know, if the internal app is being used by someone in your company and they're wasting 10 minutes a day, half an hour a week, you know, that soon adds up over a year. What could they be doing with that time? So whilst they've got, in some ways, they've got no choice. They can't leave you as a customer because it's an internal app. I still think even in there, you have to always justify the time to fix it versus the time it saves. But I think there's even an argument sometimes to not get into the situation you're talking about, where these apps just get slower and slower over time. And before you know it, someone's spending half an hour a day to do something that should take 5 minutes, sort of thing.
Yeah, if you have the problem that your site is too fast and you have to slow it down artificially, that's a pretty good problem to have. I know that Troy Hunt famously did that on his Have I Been Pwned website. He added a little sleep because it was too fast. Because, you know, you have to have the sense of work being done. Work does take some milliseconds.
Yeah, I think people have this expectation that if it happens instantly, it's not really done it.
Yeah.
But I think from what I understand of that test with Google, they did like an A-B testing type thing, and they saw, you know, that we don't all operate at the Google scale of things, but, you know, there's probably some scale for all of us where people are going to get annoyed or leave our site or refuse to buy our product again or those sorts of things. And where that comes, you know, I'm not saying we all have to shave half a second off our page load times. That's maybe an extreme, but There's some level of it, and maybe not continuously letting things, like you say, boiling the frog over and over until it's so bad and it's unusable.
Google, actually, interestingly, just last week is testing a new feature on their Android devices where check this out. I'm interested in what you think about this. Their search results contain hints to what the most heavy thing, the most heavy resource is on that particular page you're about to go to, so that when you click on a result on mobile, they will start prefetching like a large CSS file or a big JavaScript file in anticipation of you heading over to that page. And apparently they're saying it's shaved 100 milliseconds off the average search result within that browser.
Oh, nice. Yeah, because I know before they've done, certainly in Chrome anyway, they do preloading of links they think you might go to do that sort of idea. And I think it's the way things are going, isn't it? Everyone, the bar's being raised constantly, isn't it? Gmail or whoever came along and showed what a fast JavaScript application looked like, and now the old style applications that people were happy with, I don't know, 10 years ago or whenever it was, people aren't happy with anymore. And yeah, like you say, these things are going up and up, and pulling out all the tricks, I guess, once you've done, you know, you've minified your page and your gzipped and all that sort of stuff, you have to look at these things like prefetching. But yeah, that sounds like a nice technique.
Well, and let's dig into this from a much lower level. The goal, of course, is to make things feel fast for the user, but taking performance seriously is kind of the most important thing. I noticed that in your analysis of the Roslyn code base, which is a really big code base, we're talking about 2 million plus lines of code.
Yeah.
It seemed like they were measuring performance against a number of scenarios.
Yeah, they had a couple of things. So one thing they do is, like you say, they look at small, medium, large solutions. I mean, my understanding, again, from looking on the outside in, is that the Roslyn as a compiler can't be slower than the previous compilers, because us as, you know, devs using Visual Studio are not going to like that. And also, Roslyn has a slightly unique thing in that it's doing something on every key press. There's the kind of big full build, but there's also all the stuff it does to power IntelliSense and all that sort of stuff going on. So there's quite tight things. There's And from what I understand is that they basically categorized it. So this is something that happens on a key press. So we have one level of performance. This is something that happens, in line with the build. So we have another type of thing, you know, so there's that kind of categorization. And then they took that and, did that as a continuous build. So every time they build, they run all this stuff and see that, if they, at the very least daily, I think, and possibly even more than that, in the same way that we run unit tests regularly to see if the bit of code we've just teched in has broken something. The same idea that we run performance tests, and so that we know straight away that some bit of code that might be fixing something has also, harmed the performance. And they have that idea and they look at, elapsed time, average time, percentile, that sort of things. So they dig in quite deeply and making sure that they cover at the very least the hot paths and these things that happen on every key press. But I'm sure they've got in the background this idea of, well, what does this performance look like if someone opens up a solution with 1,000 CS project files in it, and what's going to happen then?
And they did that with, you know, with for lack of a better word, manager sponsorship, right? This isn't a hobby. This isn't someone doing this in their spare time. Like, This is important. It's baked into the team that these performance numbers matter.
Yeah, there's interest. There's other picks I've picked up from some of the stuff on discussions. And my understanding is that there's at least one engineer or maybe others who deal with performance. And so they might take a look at the basics, because you don't want to necessarily prioritize performance in everything you do, because sometimes there's the whole thing about premature optimization, and you don't want to optimize stuff for the sake of it, or you don't want to optimize something that the time it takes to optimize is not worth the payback you get from the faster code. So from my understanding, someone's come in at some point in the development. Obviously, they're smart devs and they've had this they've tried to write the best code they can while they're doing it going through. But then someone stepped in and looked at the particular hot path, profiled it, and tried to understand, well, no, this part is going slowly. What can we do here? Or this part is not performing as quickly as we need it to. We can take a look here. So yeah, like you say, it's, I think there's something structured. It's not an accident. I think that's part of it as well. You have to take some steps to do this stuff. You can't you can't necessarily rely on just finding performance issues in development by accident, because you don't test in the same way. You don't have the same setup as production. So there's some deliberate steps you have to take to say, look, this is a common part of our page, or this is a common part of our product. Let's see how this behaves when we have 10,000 users, or we run it 20 times a second, or whatever the scenario might be, as opposed to just running it once and see how it works out.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that beginners fall into is this idea of micro benchmarks, right? You know, they think performance is a unit test that they put a little timer around, and they maybe shove 1,000 of something into a bundle or a list of some kind and do some operation. They go, yeah, that's performance, but that may not be reflective of how the product is ultimately used. And in the Roslyn examples you gave, those are all real world things. Like, this is when a normal person types and IntelliSense pops up and a normal person types at this speed. This is reflective of an end to end performance test.
Yeah. I definitely, the idea that you first look at something end to end, and then, yeah, you may end up writing some micro benchmark at the end because you've identified one bit of code that you know should always perform under 1 millisecond, or it should always perform, it should never slow down build to build, that sort of thing. But yeah, you're right, you should never start in just micro benchmarks, because it's too easy to get into details. That bit of code might be called once in the entire runtime of your application, so anything you do there is not going to make the difference, whereas there might be another bit of code that is called 1,000 times a second or 1,000 times a minute or whatever that you haven't looked into. So I think there is a place for micro benchmarks if you can start with the higher level stuff and then drill down. If you determine that there's one bit of code that needs to always be very quick, that is justified. But yeah, as you say, it's and there's tricky stuff with, you know, benchmarks. There's a you go on Stack Overflow, the site, and you'll see the ways people can get benchmarks wrong, and you can measure things incorrectly. You cannot take account of the .NET jitter. There's stuff that you need to consider once you get into the level of micro benchmarks to be sure that you really are measuring the application, the bit of code you think you're measuring. You need to run stuff, like you mentioned, several times to get an accurate representation of how long it really takes and things like that. So it's there's a bit of an art to doing it, and I think it's something that you can get wrong if you're not careful.
How important do you think it is for performance metrics to be kind of up front and center? Sometimes they're buried off in some operations dashboard, or even worse, in someone's text file somewhere in a log that no one looks at.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about a minute ago, the idea that you kind of really like to know about your performance issues before your customers are telling you about it, or before the CEO runs the site and it behaves badly. So whatever you can do to get them, whether that's alerts. I mean, one of the problems with alerts you often find is that there's so many of them. So having more alerts isn't necessarily a good thing sometimes, because people just learn to ignore them. So meaningful alerts, have them in a place so you can find them easily. Like you say, don't have to dig into them. I really like the example from Stack Overflow. They released a tool called Mini Profiler, and there's other ones available like Glimpse. Glimpse probably maybe more fully featured, but Mini Profiler was one of the early ones. Maybe that it sits in the corner of your web page, or it can work in other scenarios, but it was mostly tailored for that, and gives you a drill down of where the time's taken to render that page, database time, time in your controller, time in your front end, in your rendering, your view, these sorts of things, and having that. I think that's something that's very valuable, having that in development, so your devs can get an idea of, you know, if you're a dev, you're hitting the development page five times a day, and you see suddenly something go a lot slower, you're going to investigate it then, as opposed to wait till later. But yeah,
so
I think that.
So you think it's important to put those things like if you're a developer not in production, or even if you're maybe in production but you're logged in with some magic powers as a developer, you should see perf like right there.
Yeah, I think apparently there's been times where they found perf issues in Stack Overflow because their devs they don't expose it to users of the site, but whoever the devs and others get to see it, and they've, you know, someone's sitting there and suddenly a page takes 400 milliseconds when they expect their page to take less than 100, and you know, that's enough. And I'm sure they have metrics that would flag that up as well, but having that if nothing else, I think having that sort of the first step is a great way to go. To it stops the thing of like, oh, I didn't realize the page was behaving slowly. It kind of makes it a bit harder for devs in some way, because they've got no excuse. But it does, any time I've been working on a site or some code and we've turned that on, we've always been slightly surprised about what we found, and we've gone away to fix up things straight away. If nothing else, it'll tell you if you're hammering the database with lots of calls, and that's normally a bad sign of performance. If you select 10 plus ones, it'll flag things up like that for you. But it's always hard to figure out where time is being taken, so having something that tells you that as soon as you can see that is definitely a benefit. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of Glimpse, and before that, Mini Profiler. I think Glimpse does most of what Mini Profiler does now.
But yeah,
the idea to in the browser on the page see that something went wrong, and I would even go so far as to like, if I were in development, change the background color of the page, make it red if it didn't come back in a certain number of seconds. Really put it up front. If things are not performant in a deeply unperformant way, everyone should know.
Yeah, that's a nice idea, actually. Yeah, definitely. You want something, whether it's dashboards or something. Yeah, because if generally, you know, if stuff starts performing badly, there's a very high chance that your customers are going to see that. It's unlikely that you're only seeing that as a dev looking at the site as opposed to customers. So yeah, you'd want to know as soon as possible.
I think it's funny that people are really willing to put in, you know, lights and traffic lights, traffic robots to tell you whether or not the build is failing, but you don't see that as much if performance is not up to snuff.
Yeah, when I was looking around at this particular thing, there's a few places I found it, but it's not so many. I don't think it's whether it's a tooling thing or a thing. I mean, like this whole premature optimization, you don't want to get down to the point where everything, you know, if any slight bit of your code runs slower, you completely fail it. But yeah, I think there's a sort of middle ground. And one library I did see it in is Noda Time from John Skeet, his library, where he, it's kind of a system level library. He's in effect writing a replacement for date time and date time offset and all the international nation stuff that goes on with dates and times. And so that, you are using that library and you're not expecting that library to be slow in any way. So I think that's a definite place where there's no real premature optimization because it's something you want to be quick. So he has on every build, he has performance tests that run and will say this particular performance test is running slower than the last build. Is this something you want to sort out? And then, yeah, but no, I think that's a nice idea. There probably are, I think in the Roslyn anyway, I would imagine that they, if not breaks the build, it certainly flags it up if things get slower build to build. Because, you know, if they've gone to the effort of putting all this in place, it would be strange to not be acting on it.
Well, that brings up another interesting point. There's the performance as it is now, but then there's that historical performance, right? I mean, it's one thing to say this page is red or whatever because it's less than 2 seconds or it's more than 2 seconds in the time it took to load, but that doesn't put anything in context. There's no graph there to express that, you know, well, we did double performance from before. It's still not correct, but we are moving in a certain direction. So what do we do to collect those statistics and look at performance over time?
Yeah, that's something I've been wondering myself, trying to look around and see what's around it. I mean, I think a lot of CI tools or tools that will run on builds and do unit tests and show graphs of their pass and failures, I think a lot of those have an option for you to output some other metric. So if the tool offers that, then that's one way, I think, is so they generally automatically pick up the number of pass and fails of tests, and you can see those graphs. But from my understanding, some of those tools offer a way to say, you know, we'll have one particular bit of code that runs on every build, and it outputs a metric that represents the time that we care about, and then we can graph that. Other than that, it may be a case of pushing those graphs into some other third-party tool that just does graphs in general. There's online tools, you know, Graphite or things like that that run that can just basically have REST endpoints and you can push data in. So that might be an option. So, yeah, I think it's something that when I've seen it, they seem to be hand-rolled solutions from the ones I've seen so far. So I don't know if it's not a solved problem or I'm just missing the ones. Maybe it could be that I'm just missing the ones that do it for you.
Well, certainly there's tools like Stack Overflow's Ops Server that is absolutely amazing piece of work. Mm. It's a complete dashboard. They use it for SQL performance, for Redis, for their Elasticsearch. And they can look at things like CPU utilization in, you know, live over time, and it's pretty extraordinary. And it's all open source. So certainly we could build on top of things like that.
Yeah. I'd seen that previously. That's a nice tool, actually. Yeah. Yeah. And like, the other stuff they do, it's nice that they make it freely available from my understanding, the tools, they couldn't either find tools that were tailored to their need or, you know, I don't think they write tools themselves on a whim. You know, they haven't got the time to just be always doing their own tools. So I trust that they had a good reason for writing that because the commercially available ones weren't doing what they're doing. But yeah, it's nice that they've spun that out and made that available. And I think that is a good thing in terms of this single dashboard, one place where you can get this stuff. And yes, you might drill down further, but not having to look at some logs that are on one machine and correlate those with something else that's going on another machine. And then, you know, and then hope the machine hasn't recycled in the cloud and you've lost those logs or whatever. So having something central that deliberately collects this stuff in a way that not only alerts you, but gives you a way of going back to look over time or spot these issues.
Well, it's so important that that not be a toy or someone's spare time project. Like, you need a manager or a boss to accept that this is important. This is a thing that someone really needs to work on. I mean, I don't think Ops Server was, I hope not. I have to ask the Stack Overflow folks. I certainly hope that wasn't written, you know, in someone's, on someone's weekend.
No, exactly. No, you're right. Yeah, going back to the Roslyn thing, making it a deliberate thing. Yeah. From all my, from the outside looking at Stack Overflow, they do this stuff because they're serious about it. They blog about their times when they weren't as fast as they wanted to be. They write tools. I think it's a culture. That's maybe a better way of describing it, in terms of we deeply care about performance. You know, not that they're sacrificing other things, security or whatever that's going on as well, but they care about performance because in their world, in terms of page render times and stuff like that, that matters for Google results, or that matters for a good experience for the thousands of devs who are using the site, or it matters because they can run on the hardware they have and not have to, you know, they can cope with burst loads and things like that. I think is a combination of those things.
What about benchmarking? That. You've said that there's an art to benchmarking. I think people sit down and they start measuring things, and then they realize that they weren't really measuring at all what they thought they were.
Yeah. So there was a lot of it comes down to when you get to a certain level, there's categories. So, milli benchmarks, micro benchmarks. So some of these things apply to, but once you get down to a low level, you really have to worry about, one of the main things is the .NET jitter. So without doing a whole tutorial on that, basically we write C# code or VB.NET or whatever we write, that gets turned into IL and then, compiled into IL, and then at runtime the jitter kicks in and turns that into code that runs on the machine, and there's other scenarios, but generally that's the main way that happens. And the jitter can basically optimize in any way it sees fit that doesn't change the behavior of your program. And often when you're writing a micro benchmark, you're calling a bit of code in a loop, and the jitter might just say, hey, you're not using the value, you're just calling this code, you're not doing anything with the value it returns, or you're not even returning a value. So one of the scenarios I found that you have to be careful is that when you get down to a certain level, if you're benchmarking things at quite a low level, there's a chance that the jitter will just optimize it out. And the other side of that is you have to make sure that you are running in release mode, you're not running inside a debugger. You know, when Visual Studio, when you run inside a debugger, it doesn't optimize the code in the same way as when you launch the executable outside of Visual Studio, for instance. There's a few things there you have to worry about, because the debug mode is useful for debugging, but it's slower by definition, because it puts in things to help make the debugging experience nice. And another one is you want to try and isolate as much as you can the garbage collection. If you're running something in a loop for a long period of time, there may be a point where the garbage collection kicks in, and a lot of benchmarks will in effect call GC collect, the thing we're never told to call for real in production. But in a benchmark, that's one thing. If we're talking about .NET anyway, we want to make sure that we do what we can to get the garbage collection out of the way, because it will artificially change the speed of your benchmark in effect if the garbage collection kicks in the middle.
How often do you think people are overthinking these things? They're doing pretty basic work. They're going to the database, they're pulling stuff back, spinning through collections, and then suddenly they're off tweaking .NET GC settings because they convinced that they are a unique snowflake.
Yeah, no, there definitely is that. When I do a talk and I say some of these things I've seen in Roslyn or other places, I put a big warning saying, please do not go back and change your code to match any of these scenarios. You have to be measuring this stuff first to work out if it's even valid. It's quite nice as engineers. Maybe if you like to look at low level stuff or whatever, it's quite nice to go in and say, oh, I tweaked the GC, or I made something that will run 1 millisecond faster over 1,000 runs or whatever. But we need to kind of see the wood for the trees, if you like, if that's the analogy, that we're not just doing this for the sake of it. There is some times when it's valid, whether it's say something like Noda time, where you're a system level library, or it's Stack Overflow, where you're running at that performance level, or even a regular app, if you identify what your hot path is, and you know, if it's running 20 times a second, then you know, shaving a millisecond off can help there. So there's scenarios where it's valid, but yeah, it's definitely a very easy trap to fall in to say, you know, I've seen this nice trick, I'm gonna rewrite all my code. I mean, one of the things that in Roslyn and Hotpass is they disallow link. They say we're not going to use link, because there's, when you run link, the query language, or the nice functional way of doing stuff in .NET, it's fantastic, but behind the scenes to give you that nice experience as a developer, it does a bit of extra work than the old for each loop way in certain scenarios. So there's been times where they rewrote some link queries into the old style queries to just minimize the extra work that was going on that would eventually turn into extra work for the garbage collector. And they identified that was a hot path, they identified that there was extra work being done there, and they identified that getting rid of link in that scenario was a good thing to do. But I definitely don't think getting rid of link as a common thing is link is fantastic. writes more readable code, people can understand it. There's definitely stuff that's, this is a good example for if you care about performance in this bit of code, but don't do this elsewhere in the code base, because more often than not, code that is good from a performance point of view is less readable code, because it's not the code someone would have written the first time around.
So this one term, I think you might be saying it quickly, and not everyone who listens will have heard that. The term you're saying is hot paths?
Hot paths, yes. Sorry,
this
hot paths.
This is the code execution paths that the compiler, where kind of most of the execution time is spent. It's kind of like the 80-20 rule, right? 20% of the code is being used 80% of the time.
Yeah, exactly that thing. So you know, it's different. So on a website, it may be the bit that does the validation of the user on every request that's shared across every request on every page on the site, or on Roslyn, it's the bit that's done on every time we hit a key in Visual Studio and Roslyn does something in the background to reprocess that. That would be considered Roslyn's hot path. So that varies across applications. I've previously worked in applications that run in factories and are constantly taking images of things going under along a conveyor belt. And so our hot path is we have to make sure we're processing the image before the next image comes along. We've got a fairly constrained thing. So it varies, you know, whatever your application might be, it's the bit that's done more often than not, like you say, the 80-20 rule. And yeah, certainly in Roslyn, I think is more of a general term. It's referred to as the hot path. Yeah.
And this is useful for more than just performance, also for testing and things like test coverage. People often talk about, how I want to get 100% test coverage. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the piece that you're deciding to do test coverage of is even happening very often. Really, I'd rather have 100% test coverage on the 20% of the code that everyone is in all the time.
Yeah, that's definitely true as well, actually. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, if in an ideal world, like you say, you know, if we could get 100% test coverage, maybe that's worth something, although even that, sometimes people argue about whether that's something worth aiming for. But yeah, if you're constrained with time, yeah, certainly looking at the bits that every user's using versus the bit of the site that gets used once a week or something. Yeah, I mean, there's always priorities, isn't there? It could be, it often comes down to business or something like that, or whatever's driving where the developers spend their time. But we can sometimes concentrate our time on the wrong parts, maybe the parts that are more interesting to us, but not what our users use.
Well, you have a wealth of great information at mattwarren.org. Underneath the recent pages, you go into the .NET Garbage Collector, the Roslyn Codebase, RavenDB, Redis, the Art of Benchmarking, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
No problem. Thank you very much, Scott.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.